Good evening, everybody. Sorry we're getting started late. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
David.
For those who care to join us, let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They're across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. The AA preamble says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, you got a 3-for-1. We're gonna do steps 5, 6, and 7. And it's kind of funny, we're also, we're doing something new. And I know there's like at least 4 people who've never been to this meeting before, so it won't matter to you. But normally what we do is we have 2 invited speakers and then one of the home group members will chair the meeting and then we go through paragraphs in the big book and the invited speakers will share for a few minutes on each paragraph. And what we've decided to do, or what we're gonna try out on the last Monday of the month, is we're gonna kind of stay with the same format except for we're gonna have a lead speaker. And when the lead speaker is done, then I'm gonna call on people to come up to the podium and share for a few minutes. Okay, make sense? If I look out there and you're just like, you know, obviously not wanting to make eye contact with me, then I'll call on you for sure at that point. No, I'm not gonna do that. Okay. So this evening, 5, 6, and 7, Step 5 says, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step 6 says, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step 7 says, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. So we'll start tonight reading on page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We've admitted certain defects. We've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which when completed will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the 5th step in the program of recovery. And then it talks about how to pick somebody to share this with, and we'll just pretend we're going to do that with our sponsors. We'll continue on page 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they'll never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension, and that makes for more drinking. So, and then on page 75, it says, when we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel a nearness to our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but we now begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. So we'll stop there, and I'll introduce our lead speaker tonight. Please welcome Amy.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy. And one of the things that didn't get read in this section was that, and it might not even be this section, but it is that we want to enjoy a reputation that we know we do not deserve. And that is absolutely the story of my life. So doing a four-step and getting out that I have resentments, which basically I have resentments against everybody. None of you have done what I thought you were supposed to do. You're a huge disappointment to me. The world just doesn't treat me the way I think I deserve. But my fear underneath that anger that I show the world is that I'm really afraid I don't deserve to be treated any better than you treat me, or that I think you treat me, perceive that you treat me. And then I get into a sex inventory, and really all through the whole thing, I'm finding out that my motives are very self-seeking. I'm very dishonest, because basically I think that you only exist to make me feel good about myself. And you're definitely not doing your job. And I definitely do not feel good about myself. The first time that I ever did a fourth and fifth step, I was very young, 9 or 10 years old, and I was an Alateen. And the greatest secret of my young life was that I wished my parents, who were active alcoholics, were dead. And my brother and I read Agatha Christie. I was a weird kid. I mean, even alcoholism, but weirdness on top. I read Agatha Christie, and I had a notebook of all the different ways to kill people and get away with it. And my brother and I consulted this notebook frequently. And the last, because we rolled in it, luxuriated in it. It was, you know, maybe what we thought the best thing that could possibly happen to us was if we could just off them and get away with it. I don't know what we were going to do at 8 and 10 years of age, but we thought it was a great idea. And so I ended up in Alateen, and I told my Alateen sponsor that what we had been doing most recently was collecting tomato leaves. We always volunteered to go to the grocery store, and we would linger behind my parents, and we would pick leaves off tomatoes, because I had read that tomato leaves are toxic and they'll kill you. And so my parents could not understand why all of a sudden we wanted to be so helpful and go to the grocery store. We were plotting their demise. But I told this woman, her name was Marguerite, I told this woman, and it was the hardest thing in the world to tell somebody. And kind of the way that she led me through a four-step at that time was, what are the secrets that you have that you wake up in the middle of the night when you're all alone and the world is dark? And those are the things that you think about. And those are the ways that you believe you are in the world. So basically how I was in the world was, I'm a child murderer and I want my parents to be dead, and I am surely going to hell, if not something worse, because my conception of God was, you got to earn it. So I was dangling over the fiery pit. I was hanging by a thread. And if I didn't end up in hell, something worse was going to happen, because what I had earned was, I don't know, being kidnapped and tortured and murdered, something awful. I had a very dark mind. But the most wonderful thing that happened was that I told this to this woman, and she had red hair and she had lipstick on and she had this blue eyeshadow. I remember the whole thing. She was so put together. And I thought, I was afraid to tell her, because I thought for sure she's going to call child services, she's going to call the police, I'm going to end up in jail. But she had said it, I mean, she had led me into it so beautifully. Having a sponsor that I trust makes a really big difference. I mean, if I don't trust him, it's got to be done no matter what. But having a sponsor that I trusted made me be able to tell her this. And she looked at me and she said, honey, I probably would have done the exact same thing. And it just changed the world for me. I mean, I still pretty much thought I was a sure in for hell, but the kidnapping, the torturing, the laying awake at night wondering what awful thing was going to come to me because of what was in my head, that went away. And what also happens is that I get to come out of that isolation, because I am a person who lives up in my head. And in my head, I am beating myself up that I'm not better. I should have done better. I should have taken care of that. I should have been nicer. I should have had a better, just shouldn't all over myself all the time. And when I tell somebody this stuff and they don't run screaming from the room, they don't call the cops, I start to think that maybe, just maybe, I'm eligible to be part of the human race. I am not so broken. That's what I always thought. Everyone else was born and they just spend the rest of their lives moving forward, moving forward, moving forward. But I started from a way back position. And so once I was born in that broken, dark state, I had to spend my whole life working harder than everyone else to try to be worthy. I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought. So the double life that I led was that I wanted you to think that I was strong and confident and could handle any situation, and I was going to school. I kept going to school. My big secret was I just keep getting degrees so I don't have to get a job. But I kept going to school, so I look like a student. I'm wearing the right clothes. I'm even in the junior league. But what I'm actually doing on the weekends is I'm giving blowjobs at this place called the Cherry Motel. You can imagine what kind of place the Cherry Motel is. It's one of those places that you rent by the week or you rent by the hour, but nobody actually wants to live there or stay there long term. So that's what I was up to. And when people would see my car down at this place, they would say, oh, I saw your car down at the Cherry Motel. What were you up to? I would say, my junior league project is literacy, and I'm helping these people fill out their forms so they can get social services down here and get some help. That's what I told everyone. Because I'm a great liar. I'm a great performer. In the absence of knowing anything at all about who God made me to be, I defaulted into all these roles. You know, one of them was the spoiled kid. Another one is the smartest kid in the class. Another one was the slut. Whatever will inform me as to who I am and what I'm supposed to be doing, because I have no idea at all that people wait on God's will for them and that people find out who they really are. And none of that kind of stuff is possible as long as I'm playing these roles. And I mean, I can even do it now, Ms. AA, Ms. Spirituality, instead of just being present in the moment and just being honest, being real, being truthful, right in the now. I have this whole script in my head. Some people call alcoholism the chameleon disease. So all this stuff gets addressed in a fifth step, and I tell the truth about myself. And it seems like every single time in my life when everything is burning down, not just I've got a problem over here with a couple of people, but I got a problem here, I got a problem here, everything is burning down, it's usually time for me to cycle through the steps again. And the last time that I went through the steps, my partner was dying. And what I needed to take a look at was my resentments that were making my head explode. Because every day what I was thinking was, if you don't die, I'm gonna die first. This is killing me. Going to the hospital, afraid to leave the house. I'm afraid to leave the house, but all I really wanna do is leave the house. I have to take care of you. This isn't what I signed on for. I never married anybody because I definitely didn't want to be anyone's wife. I definitely didn't want to wait on anyone. And really, I don't want anyone to be the boss of me. But here is this person that I've been with for 15 years, and he's dying, and it's bad. And I have to care for him. And I want to be a loving person. And I am discovering, as this is going down, I'm not loving. I'm not as loving as I'm sure God wants me to be. I'm not even as loving as I want to be, but I can't tell anyone. And so the time is ripe. It's time to do a four step. And then that four step leads to a fifth step, and I get to tell somebody. And again, almost the exact same experience. If I were in your position, I'd feel the exact same way. And that's one of the gifts of walking this path with others and trusting people with the broken pieces of me and just kind of putting them out and saying, all right, here's what I've got. I know it's ugly. What do you got for me? And what I always get back in return is love and acceptance. So that's all I have to say about that.
Thank you, Amy. David, you want to do a few minutes on fifth step? You've done it right.
I'm sitting in the back next time. Now, my name is David Yulian. I'm an alcoholic. I was just sitting there listening to Miss Amy, and I'm like, man, I spent 12 years in public school system learning how to read. I should have just gone to the Cherry Motel. anyway, man, you know what puts me at a position in my life that I have to face something like this, putting down all my things on a piece of paper, all the wrongs that I committed, and then telling them out loud to myself, to a God, and to someone else, you know, is about 14 years of active alcoholism, chronic alcoholism, and some other, you know, cool things that did really good things for my life. But, I was real worried. I was about 5 months sober when I took the steps. It was about 5 years, a little over 5 years ago when I took the steps, and I left my house in the morning. I was at my sponsor's house. I actually took the steps on July 4th, which was pretty cool. Rocketed into a fourth dimension. And so I left my house like 6 o'clock in the morning and stopped to get a cup of coffee. And I was supposed to be at my sponsor's house. I was at my sponsor's house at 7, which is the time that we agreed on. And the whole time I was on the ride over there, man, I was trembling. I was shaking like a leaf. Because the thing that was bothering me the most was I wasn't a blackout drinker. I remember a lot. There's little periods that I don't remember in the course of like a 24-hour span, but other than that, I wasn't a blackout drinker. So what was bothering me was the fact that, you know, I was 34 years old when I was doing this for the first time, the first and the only time, and I was worried that I wasn't going to remember everything, you know, because I was hearing people in meetings and thoroughness and honesty and thoroughness and honesty and. Is this a no cussing meeting? So I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, you know what? How am I supposed to remember? I've done a lot of bad things to bad people, and I've done a lot of bad things to good people. The bad things to good people weighs on me a lot more than the bad to bad people things. And I was just terrified that I wasn't going to be able to remember all. And me not being able to remember everything to put on this list, that I was somehow going to eventually have to, you know, because I missed a couple things, I was going to go back out and get back into chronic alcoholism and drug addiction. And that's the last thing that I ever wanted. And so I show up. Long story short, I show up to my sponsor's house that morning. You know, we do some reading and this and that and the other. You know, when we get to this part in the literature, and he's like, okay, you know. And he sits me down, and I was a nervous wreck, man. I mean, a nervous wreck. And because I got a lot of things that have been weighing on my soul and my conscience for quite a long time. And he sits me down, and we go. There's no one else in the house, which was very important to me, you know, because I had to check for cameras and shit, you know, I wanted to make sure no one was watching. And he sits me down, and he begins to tell me some of the things that was on his original four-step 20 years prior to this. And I was like, man, you know, they kind of link up to some of the things that were on my list that I was getting ready to write down. And it put me at ease. And one of the very important things that just kind of set the ball rolling was, he said, you know, I don't expect anybody to remember everything that they've ever done. If at any time in the future you remember something, and they still come up to this day, if at any time in the future you remember something, he said, you call me and we'll talk about it. And I said, check. Because I was like, yes, right? Because the things that I really wanted to talk about were the things that I had in my head that I've been burying down with drugs and alcohol for a long time. And when they would resurface, I'd start to feel like crap, and I'd wash them right back down. 24 hours, and sometimes I forget about them for a week or so. Sometimes it'd be a month, but eventually something would ring that bell, and I'd be like, oh, my God. Right back down. So what happened was, is still I was feeling a little, I was kind of wound real tight. And he was like, listen, man, he says, I don't want you to tell me how the watch works. I want you to tell me what time it is. He said, you understand what I'm saying? I said, I do. And he said, if you feel like that pack of Topps baseball cards you stole back from the corner store in the summer of 1989 is blocking you from the sunlight of the spirit, then you put it on your list. He said, but honestly, that's not the stuff I want to hear. I want to hear about the stuff that you are terrified to walk through the doors, the double doors at your mom and dad's church on Christmas, because you know the big man knows what you done. And I was like, man, this is okay. I got this. So I sat down and I wrote until I was finished. And I remember sitting in that kitchen table, and we were drinking espresso, and I was about to come out of my socks, and I was like, oh man, this is great. You know, I'm getting ready to tell this guy. And I did. I went through the whole list. And one of the last things that David read was on page 75, and it says, we pocket our pride, blah, 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 blah. Once we have taken a step withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. Not even just the world, but I can stand in front of a mirror and look myself dead square in the eye in the mirror, which I had not been able to do for a long, long time. I mean, I got to a point in my life where every mirror I walked by, I didn't want to see, because I knew who I had become, and it was very aggravating to me. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease, which is, again, something that I had not experienced in years. Being completely alone at perfect, not just peace and ease, but perfect peace and ease. That was, man, I tell you what, everything in this book that I've read, that has been read to me, that I've read with so many other guys, everything, man, everything is just coming true. And you know, this paragraph right here about looking the world in the eye and being alone at perfect peace and ease, and the whole rest of that paragraph, man, it's just awesome. And I'm going to stand here and tell you that I am 197% sure that if I would not have gotten involved in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, taken the 12 steps, and at this step been as thorough and honest as I possibly could at that moment, that this would have never happened to me, withholding nothing. Everything that I was on my plate that was getting ready to get thrown away, I put on that paper and I talked about out loud with myself, God, and my sponsor that day. And all this, I walked out the door. I walked out the door that day, and I think it was July 4, 2014. And I had this, man. I felt like the 1,000 pounds that I've been carrying around for years and years and years was lifted off my shoulders, you know. And some of these things that were on my list didn't happen about in active alcoholism. I had a couple things that were on my list that from when I was a child before I even hit double digits. And I've been carrying that since I was 34 years old. And when I released that, man, it was just like, I could stand up straight again, you know. I could look people that I've never seen before in the eye. I could look people that I know in the eye, and I could look myself dead square in the eye. And it's amazing. And, you know, anyone in here, you know, if you're new and you think you might have this, you know, if you want what we got, you got to do what we do. And it's very simple. It really is. Thank you.
Thank you.
BJ, would you like to come share?
My name's BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, BJ.
Thanks for leading. This stuff teaches me something I've never had. That's integrity. My disease manifests itself primarily in hiding. Dishonesty, but specifically hiding. That's how I drank. I think I would rather have a Deer Park bottle full of vodka in my purse than openly have a six pack that I'm drinking in front of you. And I can't tell you why, but it goes a lot deeper than that. That's how my actions are towards other people too. And it's all about getting what I think I need to be okay. A big part of my story is when I was in middle school, my first year of middle school, I was kind of an oddball and I didn't fit in. And I can remember being in health class. We would walk around the track and we would kind of divide ourselves into cliques. You know, there'd be like the popular girls walking together and the brainiacs and the rebels. And then there was just me walking by myself. I couldn't look anybody in the eye. I was terrified of people. And just so uncomfortable in my own skin. By my second year of middle school, I realized this is not gonna work. I've gotta do something to be able to fit in. So I learned pretty quickly that if I became who everybody needed me to be in each situation, then I would have friends. For example, when I hung around with the popular girls, if I wore American Eagle and talked in a high voice and you know, put other people down, then I could be friends with them. When I was with the nerds and the smart people, if I did homework with them, then I could be friends with them. If I played soccer with the jocks and wore sweatpants and was really laid back, then I could be friends with them. So I learned to be a chameleon. I was leading a double, triple, quadruple life. So when I got to AA and I read the steps on the wall, I wasn't one of those people who were terrified when I read steps 4 and 5. Steps 8 and 9 weirded me out a little bit. I wasn't excited about that, but honestly, I was dying when I got here, and I was so ready to do anything that I needed to do in order to get sober. And I immediately, and this is not everybody's experience, and when you first get here, you don't have to be ready for step 4 and 5, but I was, because I knew somehow in some way that was going to save my life. So, fast forward, I did as thorough of a 4-step as I could, in a timely manner, because I, through experience, I learned that I needed to do it, or I was gonna drink again. And with the 5th step, I need to have one person in my life that knows everything there is to know about me and everything I've ever done. And my sponsor, it was intimidating, because this woman had 15 plus years of sobriety, and more importantly than that, she was doing this thing and her life was together. She was just radiant, and she had what I wanted, which is why I asked her to sponsor me in the first place. And to think that I'm gonna be telling this person who has their life together all these sordid, like really dark, creepy stories of my life, it was intimidating. But again, I was more willing to do that than to live 60, 70 more years like I was feeling right then and there. I might as well, you know, kill myself, to be honest with you. So we did it, and I did. It took us, I know everybody does it differently. We met probably 4 or 5 times. It took us hours and hours, and afterwards I was exhausted. I felt like I'd run a marathon. But to this day, I need to have one person who knows everything there is to know about me. And no offense, I'm not going to share all my stuff with you guys. I share it in a general way, but, you know, I need that. And what that looks like today, after almost 4 years, I still tell her stuff that's icky. And to, as Amy said, just having somebody who didn't turn and run or shame me when I got honest with them, it turned something in me. And today, you know, like I just said, I'll be at work and I'll do something real shady. And usually my motives are, what can I get? I need something to make me feel some kind of way. Me. It's always selfish. And on my way home from work, I pick up the phone and I call her and I let her know. And that sounds excessive, but I need to do that. And of course, I do need to start walking in a different direction. That's coming, but just the honesty. And I am not 100% honest today. I have to do the daily inventory if I want to be happy, joyous, and free. And the dishonesty is still my biggest thing. But now I see that getting tamped down the more I do it, and it is a practice. So yeah, I think that's all I have to share. Thanks for calling on me.
You know, one of the things the literature tells me is that my dark past is going to become an asset, and that's one of those things, like a lot of things I heard when I came to AA, that I thought, yeah, maybe for you, but I didn't see that on the menu for me. And then going through with these steps, every single one of the things that Amy and BJ and David talked about, the things I was going to take to my grave, have come out again on the other side of the table. You know, in front of another man reading his inventory. Because what am I going to do? Let him be the only one who ever did that, thought that, felt that? So we're going to move on to step 6 and 7. So we've done our fifth step. We're going to pick up the reading on page 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we're building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? If we can answer to our satisfaction, then we look at step 6. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can He take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. When ready, we say something like this: My Creator, I am now willing that You should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that You now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to You and to my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do Your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step 7. Amy?
When I got to step 6 and 7, after that time of doing the steps when my partner was dying, I'm awake. You know, I'm returning home. I go through the first 5 propositions. Am I absolutely convinced that I have a physical allergy, that I have obsessions of the mind, that I have a spiritual malady, that even when I'm out from behind the bottle and other substances, I'm still restless, irritable, and discontent. I'm still prey to misery and depression. I still can't make a satisfying living. I mean, I couldn't make a living at all. I never even had a job till I was 49 years old. Just lazy, wanted somebody else to pay the bills, wanted somebody else to work. Anyway, I go through all this stuff. I see that, If my step one is solid, there's nowhere else to go but to step two. There's nowhere else because I've done everything I know how to do. I have brought all of my personal power. I have marshaled it into place with my will, and I haven't been able to budge the unmanageability of my life. In fact, the harder I try, the worse it got. So there's nowhere else to go. It's like, came to believe? Well, hell yeah, I believe. There's got to be a power greater than my own because I'm not getting anywhere. And I do need to be restored to sanity because my life is just a mess, an embarrassment, a humiliation. And I'm busy trying to prove I'm something else, but basically I'm humiliated. Not yet so humbled, but I am humiliated at that point. So I get to step two, and then I go to step three, and what step three tells me is that I'm going to turn over my will in my life. And sometimes it sounds like a big deal, but frankly, my will just about got me killed, and my life was a suck-a-doodle-do. There was nothing really that I was giving up. It wasn't a sacrifice. It was a blessing. And all that third step is telling me is I'm going to go ahead and do the rest of the steps. I used to think when I heard step three that it was like, get on your knees, take me away, Calgon, God, whatever. And that's where it comes to people in meetings saying, I turned over my will, but I took it back. I took it back. I took it back. Well, yeah, I'm human. I have an ego. My ego and my brain need to have something to do with themselves. They want to prove their worth on a daily basis. And so the only way for me to live out a step three is to continue doing the rest of these steps. That's it. So I look at the fourth proposition, the fourth step. Have I made a searching and fearless moral inventory? I have. I follow the directions in the big book. Resentment inventory, fear inventory, sex inventory. I get to a sex ideal. And I'm just going to say this because I've never said it before. A sex ideal is not a wish list for who you're going to screw next. I've heard people get up here. They really think that's what it is. It's not. So I'm looking, have I done all these things effectively? Have I done the fifth step? Are there any secrets? Is there anything I thought I would take to my grave? Are there any harms that have nothing to do with resentments that I need to bring up? So I spend some time really thinking about this stuff because I'm now solidly in this design for living. This is a new way of life. I'm making a commitment here. And I'm not a person that commits. I really don't. I'm not a joiner. The only thing I've ever joined and stuck with is Alcoholics Anonymous. I run. The minute I get uncomfortable, I'm done. See ya. So I go through that stuff, and in that place, in that returning home hour that I'm reviewing these things, I am awake. And I don't mean like this is the spiritual awakening, because for me, the first spiritual awakening, the first gift of that first awakening was I got separated from alcohol. And then there were other things, other awakenings. I found out that I had a spiritual malady. That's why my life was so screwed up long before I ever took a drink. That's why the delusion that I am like other people has to be smashed before and after. Before I ever took a drink, after I've stopped drinking, I'm still not like other people. And this is a basic thing I don't want to take in because although I kind of want to be like everybody else and fit in, I also at the same time want to be special and exceptional. So there's a big conflict between those two things. But I take a look at this stuff. I review it. I'm in an awakened state. And just like if my step one is solid, there's nowhere else to go but step two. If that fifth step is solid, there's nowhere else to go but six and seven. I recognize now through all of this stuff that I don't know what to do with myself. I'm pretending a large percentage of the time. Not only do I not know what to do about the bad parts of me, I don't actually know how to effectively and compassionately make use of the good parts of me. Because I would tell you that I am the most helpful person in the entire world, but I'll just bet you everybody who knows me would say I'm a control freak and I'm a micromanager. So I got to this point working the steps over my partner dying, and I had a snoot full of me. I could not believe that I had been with someone who had loved me and supported me, who had actually, when the recession hit, he owned a trucking company, and I kind of encouraged him when the trucks were not busy to run drugs. I did. I'm more than a decade sober, and I'm saying, well, it's a lot of money. What I was really thinking was, I don't care if you break the law, I just don't want to get a job. And I had to go with him to the federal courthouse on Granby Street. And I had to watch him stand in front of his family and our neighbors, everyone we knew, and cry his eyes out about how he had made choices. And I was sitting in that courtroom thinking, they were my choices. They really weren't his. He was a good man. I was the devil in the background saying, do it, it's 10 grand, do it. And because I was not in charge of that situation, although everyone else in the entire enterprise ended up with 25 years, 10 years, 12 years, my man ended up with 6 months of house arrest. And that wasn't even good enough for me, because really I told everyone I knew the 6 months of house arrest were harder on me than they were on him. So what I'm trying to say is that I am not a person with a sterling character. I am not seated at the right hand of the Father. No one is ever going to accuse me of being holier than that. I'm just not, and I know it. But in this state, seeing all this about me and feeling it, my man was 6'4", and he weighed about 350 pounds. And when they came in, because they come in like they're going to take you, you all may know a lot about this, maybe more than I do, but this was my first experience in the federal courthouse. They come in with the handcuffs, and they put them on the floor underneath of them, because if you're guilty, you're going. And Pete was so big that they came in with two sets of handcuffs clipped together. And I don't know what it was about that, but it made it really real. It made it really real that our whole world was about to change, basically because I did not want to get a job. And I had encouraged him to run drugs. I thought it was a little sexy. I thought it would make an interesting story, honestly. I really did. So when he's dying, I'm going through the steps again, and I get to 6 and 7, and what I see again is my catastrophic self-centeredness, that this man has taken care of me for, I don't know how long at this point, 12 years, 13 years. I have never worked. I've gone out to lunch every day. I've laid in the sun. I've done whatever I wanted to do. And he's dying, and I'm having constant temper tantrums on the inside that my life is really a pain in the butt because he takes so much medication that he can't control his bowels and I have to clean the sheets every day. Or that I have to get in the shower and take a shower with him because he is now on a permanent IV pump. And he's got this machine going straight to his heart to make his heart beat. And I am so selfish and self-centered that I am furious that I have to bathe him. That is step 6 and 7. Everybody talks about, oh, read Drop the Rock, or conversely, well, that's only a couple of paragraphs in the big book. It's not that big of a deal. You know, people make too much of it. But my contention here, my experience, is that when I've done the first 5 steps thoroughly, I am wide awake to the ugliness of self, to the bondage of self, because I have just told another human being and the God of my understanding, and really myself, because I don't even want me to know this stuff about me, that I have made choices that put other people in harm's way, that I am still a user, that I'm a user and I'm a taker. And there's just nowhere else to go. Step 6 and 7 are you awake? Have you seen it? Have you seen how objectionable it is? Give it to God. Just turn it all over to God. And go ahead and turn over the good parts of you too, because obviously you can't handle that. My way of doing things is objectionable, and it also doesn't work. I think that I am the greatest planner in the world. And I mean, I'll tell you, I'm smarter than anyone in the room. And I pretty much believe it. And I can come up with a plan that takes into all contingencies. And I'm a researcher. Like, if you read one book, oh, I read 15. In fact, when I got my job, I read every single book on art gallery management in the Virginia Beach Public Library system. And I tried to get a Norfolk Public Library card so I could hit those two. I really did. So I think that with all this information, I mean, more control freak stuff, but with all this information, that I can make good choices and good decisions. A few weeks ago, I found out that my condo was going to have an assessment and everybody had to pay $5,000. Well, I have my first job. I have my first checking account. I don't have a savings account. I can't even imagine that. And so I'm thinking, what am I going to do? So I immediately start crunching. What am I going to do? How am I going to handle it? I'm looking stuff up. I'm going to go to my boss. I'm going to ask for a raise. But I look it up. It's 3%. That's the national average to get a raise. 3%. So I'm thinking, yeah, I don't feel the pinch hard enough to really outright manipulate him, so I'm going to go to plan B, which is my mom, because my mom's the ATM. And that's not a good thing about me either, that I don't want to mess around too much with my mother, but she's always got a fat wallet, and so I'll call her up when I need money. And I haven't done that in a good long while, but I was thinking that's what I'm going to have to do. Because this is how I handle things. I'm going to have to do it. Fortunately, I told my sponsor about my big plans, how I was going to handle it. And she said, maybe you ought to write some resentment inventory. Maybe you ought to write some fear inventory. So I did. I wrote resentment inventory that I don't make more money than I do. I wrote fear inventory that I don't deserve to make any more money than I do. I've never even had a job before. I'm lucky I have a job. I wrote resentment inventory that I live in a place that is expensive, but it was given to me and I can't afford to keep it up. I wrote fear about I'll never be self-supporting. I'll always have to bend to someone else's will so that they will pay the bills for me. So I do all of that. I go into work on Monday morning, and I woke up Monday morning and I pray, God, please relieve me of the fear of financial insecurity. Not at all. Drop the $5,000, Lord. I need some help here. It was, please keep me free of fear. I went into work. By 12 noon, I had sold $22,000 worth of sculpture. I am not a salesperson. I work alone on Mondays because no one ever comes in on Mondays. But of that $22,000, $2,200 belonged to me. So I'm thinking, okay, God is present, God is real. Until a couple days go by and I start thinking, oh, taxes are going to be taken out of that and this is going to be split. And, you know, regular alcoholic Amy, it's not good enough. I need more. So I still haven't gotten up the courage to talk to my boss about a raise. The following Monday I go in and I talk to my boss. And I've prepared some numbers from him, but basically I'm thinking people who are in my position don't like make a lot of money, and there's the 3% national average for raises. That's it, in the United States, 3%, it's 2.9% a year. It's bad. And so I talked to him and I said, I know you're gonna hate this and I'm gonna hate this and we just have to have this conversation. And I mean, I'm praying while I'm talking. And I just put the stuff down in front of him, and he looked at it, and he said, I don't know, I'm going to think about this. And I said, oh, go ahead, think about it, take all the time you need, and can I get you some coffee? Because, I mean, as much as I hate it, I do know how to suck up. And what happened was that he came back to me 5 minutes later, and he gave me a 22% raise. It was a lot of money. And a week after that, same thing happened. A salesperson went out, was not in the building. Somebody came in, two more sculptures sold. So in 3 weeks, what I ended up with amounted to way more than the $5,000. And my plan had been to manipulate and maneuver my way into the money. And when I let it go, when I took inventory and I let it go and I saw how objectionable my planning and my plotting was, and I just surrendered to everything I think I know and the way that I always do things, and was ready to just fly blind, even though it really didn't make sense to me, because I like to hang on tight when it's important. That's the last time I want to let go. I let go and it turned out beautifully. And for me, that is the miracle of step 6 and 7. I'm letting go of me. I've become willing. I've been beaten into a state of reasonableness in the first five steps, and I've become willing to be a stranger to myself, because I'm going to be different than I've ever been before. I'm not really going to know me. I'm going to have to keep my mouth shut a lot, which that isn't me either. But in that silence and in that space, the God of my understanding is going to have his way with me, and it's going to turn into something great. Thanks.
Hey, God, would you do two more minutes? No. We got time for a quick one. Joe, do you want to share a little bit about steps 5, 6, or 7? Would you be up for it?
Me?
Yeah.
Sure.
Just a couple minutes.
Thanks, bro. Just a couple minutes. Let's see if we can make this fast. I don't know how I'm supposed to follow that. I'm Joe. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for the honesty tonight. I really appreciate that, and I think that's pretty much what step 5 is all about, right? You have to be honest. You have to be willing to get honest and tell your secrets. I think that's been beaten to death tonight. So if you're holding something in, you got a secret, you're probably feeling like shit right now. So you should probably call your sponsor after this. Step 6 and 7, I also thought that step 6 and 7 was a quick work in the big book, you know. It's half a page, I think. And first time I did it, I did it at a McAllister sandwich shop with my sponsor, and that was it. It was done. And that was pretty much it. And my sponsor didn't have a lot of time in the program, so I didn't think anything of it, you know. I just went ahead. All right, cool. Done with that. I also wrote my 8th step like 5 minutes before he showed up to that McAllister's like the next week. So, you know, don't do the shit that I did. When I went back through the steps with another sponsor, when I did my 3rd step, he made me go to my home group and do the 3rd step prayer with my home group. He said, they need to see your sincerity. And that was like probably one of the scariest things I had done. So when I got to step 6 and 7, you know, I'm like, okay, how do I do this? And he goes, well, don't you think if I ask you to do your 3rd step prayer with your home group, you should do your 7th step prayer with your home group? And I go, well, that makes sense, but I thought I was over that praying stuff with my home group. And I sat on it for a while, you know. I wasn't willing. I said I was willing, but I wasn't willing. I went to a meeting with him, and he shared kind of like what we heard tonight. He shared some of the most honest 4-step stuff I ever heard in my life. He shared that with strangers. He shared that with people that you don't talk about that shit in the meeting. You just don't talk about that. You know, you gotta look good. You gotta talk that good AA stuff. And he shared some really deep, dark, secret stuff. And by doing that, you know, I knew that that was a place that I could share, that I could ask that group. I mean, I started crying. I don't know what it was, but I started crying, and I asked that group to do a 7-step prayer with me, and we did that after the meeting. And I walked out of there, and he said, don't take it back, and he turned around and walked off. Turns out I took it back a lot over the years. Probably it took me 5 years of sobriety to realize that I was a human being with step 6 and 7. Yeah, it took me about five years of sobriety to realize I was a human being. I finally got to a point when I analyzed the 7-step prayer, and it says, my Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. The way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. So that tells me that sometimes my character defects are useful to people. They really are, especially in a 5th step. Especially in a 5th step. And they're useful for people in AA, especially when we're outside of these meetings, when they get to see my anger, and they get to see my fear, and they get to see my resentments, and they get to see my pride and ego. They get to see that. And you guys get to see that I'm a human being, you know? And so it took me a long time to get to a place where I started to feel comfortable with who I was. I thought I was supposed to have the 32 years of sobriety my sponsor had when I had a year sober. I thought I was supposed to be fixed. I thought I wasn't supposed to cuss. I wasn't supposed to smoke. I wasn't supposed to have sex, think about sex, jack off. I wasn't supposed to do any of that stuff. You know? I thought I was supposed to be pure as a driven snow. I'm sitting here 2.5 years sober thinking, why can't I be different? Why aren't I different? You know? Thank God I didn't drink. I think the only reason I didn't drink through that really tough time, that was tough internally for me. That was like a real struggle. And I think the only reason I didn't drink is because my sponsor said, you're going to do 2 inventories a year. You can go find another sponsor. So that's what I did. I don't know what it's like to do an inventory and just sit. I don't know what that's like. You know, but I know what it's like to do 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 twice a year. You know, and if I don't do that because I have secrets still, I still have thoughts. I still have things going rattling around in my head. I still have things that I do, you know, in the cut, just so doing what I want to do, not telling nobody about it. I still have those things. And if I'm not talking about that stuff, if I'm not constantly telling somebody what's going on in my life, I will drink again. I will drink again. That is it, you know. So we skipped over that part in the big book. It said the first reason we do step five is because people wonder why they failed. You know, they succeeded with the rest of the program, but for some reason in step five, they wondered why they failed. And it says they only thought they told someone their whole life story. They only thought they humbled themselves. And I was sitting here tonight thinking, yeah, there's some things that I really gotta, there's some things, each time I do a four step, I'm getting to the point where I'm starting to see the core of who I am, and it's not real nice, you know? It's kind of dark, and there's some shit that I don't really like, and that's all right. That's all right, you know? So, anyway, step 6 and 7 for me is every single day. Every single day. I've been thinking about a character defect all day. All day. And hopefully I don't go out this door and participate, but who knows, you know? Who knows? But I'm going to pray about it, and I really appreciate this meeting, so thanks.
Thank you. We're going to pass the 7 tradition basket.
7 tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the 7 tradition is essential. Lost my place. At every level of AA service, it is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. We may want to remember that a dollar does not go support as many services as it used to. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA? I could read when I came in here. I just can't now. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please. Thank you. Is there anybody here tonight? You're the reason that we're here. Anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. Anybody in their first 30 days?
Boy, I'm
all
10 days today.
All right. Welcome. What's your name?
Charlie.
Welcome.
James,
welcome.
Travis,
welcome. I'm feeling like 2.5.
Matthew,
welcome. Welcome. Jared, welcome. Anybody else? There's literature available over there on the table. If you can fold it, it's free. The books have a nominal charge. Just see any home group member if we can help you with a book. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available up here at the front of the room after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. There's other stuff happening at the church tonight, so we don't want them exiting the church through a cloud of smoke. All our meetings, the audio recordings can be found on our website, simpleactions.net, as well as the events. What'd you guys think? You think that was fun tonight? Did you like the format? Could we have a round of applause for everybody who shared tonight? Thank everyone who participated. And after we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. Is that right? I get that? It's new every week for 5 years. Could I have a volunteer to come up and read the last paragraphs on page 164? Would you? Yay. Thank you, Leanne.
Sure. My name's Leanne. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and we will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Close up with the Lord's Prayer.